For the week of April 25th, 2009, this is Showbiz Sandbox Episode 51, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Sanibel Island, Florida, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
And at the Apple Store in the Green Hill Malls of Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Michael Giltz.
Okay, guys, why are you where you are?
I'm actually here for the big festival, the Sanibel Island Festival. That's, of course, world-renowned. I'm on vacation, actually.
I was like, the what festival?
I'm on vacation, but I am so dedicated to bringing everyone the week's top entertainment news stories that even on vacation, I decided we had to do the podcast.
Absolutely. Does your family own a home there on the ocean or something?
And exactly what are you smoking? I would like some.
Okay, I want to know why you're at the Apple Store.
Because after 2 weeks on the road, when I pulled over and was finally ready to set up and get ready for the show, I turn on my computer and what do I get? A flashing folder with a question mark. Which is no big deal. All you need to do is get your utility disk to, launch it up and fix it. But I can't find my utility disk because I've been moving. And so I go to the Apple Store and find out that my hard drive has had an epic fail.
Why?
And it just died. They just gave me a new hard drive. They're like, here. Oh, an epic fail. I blew the story. An epic fail. And my AppleCare warranty ran out 10 days ago.
Of course it did.
But they replaced the hard drive for free because it's Apple, and they're like, it's 10 days since your thing died. Here's a new hard drive, pre-installed with all the software. So all I had to do was go home, set it up with Time Machine, my backup, and that's been working for 3 hours, and it looks like it's just frozen now, right at the last, with 1 minute to go. It looks like it's frozen.
So you're on a friend's computer then?
That's right. I'm Skyping away on another computer.
Well,
but that won't stop me from bringing you the week's top news, including the box office.
Right, we're going to get to the box office in just a minute. As always, we always begin with box office. We're not going to have any guests today because I was traveling and I didn't want to have to really figure out how to plug in a guest as opposed to plugging in both Karen and Michael. But we have a ton of news to talk about today, including, unfortunately for Karen, a ton of 3D news. That seems to be the only thing.
I'm so sick of this.
It's the only thing Hollywood talks about these days, at least when it comes to movies. And we have some interesting news coming out of Disney, and we're going to talk about some television pilots. And pilots are of course, the television shows being prepared for next television season.
And television, of course, is the information program that comes into your home via cable satellite or landline.
No, over the
version.
Air. You forgot over the air.
Over the air, if you have a digital receiver.
Correct. And that's right.
Popular shows include I Love Lucy, Gunsmoke, MASH, Seinfeld, and American Idol.
That is correct. Well, with that in mind, we're also going to talk about some music, some country music, in fact, and a little bit about MIA. So if you're a big MIA fan, stay tuned. Of course, we always do Big Deal or Big Whoop, and we also have some interesting news, and it's kind of a follow-up during Inside Baseball about a futures market betting on box office. As always, though, we turn it over to Michael to fill us in not only on the national, domestic, and of course national for the U.S. and Canada box office, but international box office this week as well.
Absolutely. The number one film of the week and an exciting upset is How to Train Your Dragon in 3D, Karen. Another good week for the movie. It held just, dropped just a little bit. It made $15 million. It's made $178 million in the U.S. It's made almost $200 million overseas. So it's about $380 million worldwide and counting. So the little movie that could, it's a big success. And number two, just a little bit behind it at $12.2 million, is the Jennifer Lopez romantic comedy The Backup Plan. I don't know whatever happened to Jennifer Lopez. She had a great film debut in Out of Sight and Selena, and then she hasn't really been able to follow up on it ever since. She's had some hits, but she just doesn't seem interested.
Fame became too important.
Yeah. So that movie made $12.2 million. At number three is Date Night, which held pretty well. That's made $10.6 million in the U.S. It's at $63 million total. Overseas, Date Night has made $27 million. Obviously, Tina Fey and Steve Carell aren't as well known overseas as their shows, spread out around the world. But that's a pretty good total. You're looking at $90 million total worldwide for a movie that costs $55 million. At number four is The Losers, a sort of A-Team ripoff. I was confused when I saw the trailer for this film, I thought it was the A-Team trailer, but it's called The Losers. It stars Idris Elba from The Wire, who's got himself a healthy ego, and I like that. It made $9.6 million, so it's not a good launch for that movie. And number five is Kick-Ass, the very cool comic book, violent comic book flick turned into a quirky, weird feature film. People thought it would make $1 billion opening week, and it didn't. It's a disaster. Now it's dropped 52%. It only made $9.5 million in its second weekend, but that's $34 million total. The movie cost $30 million, so it should get to about $60 million when all is said and done. So that will still be a success.
And I think it's made more than that overseas, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I don't have any overseas figures for Kick-Ass, do you?
I could look them up.
Yeah, please do. At number six is Clash of the Titans, still chugging along at $9 million, but it's been passed by How to Train Your Dragon quite soundly now. That's made $145 million total. At number seven, Death at a Funeral, $8 million. Oceans, the Disney film, nature film documentary, opened decently on 1,200 screens for Earth Day. That's grossed $6 million. And then the last song, in Alice in Wonderland, which grossed $2.2 million. It's at $327 million in the U.S. It's made $548 million overseas. That means its worldwide gross is $844 million. By next weekend, it will be the 20th biggest film of all time. And it's a movie you almost forget you saw and don't even quite remember. And I don't know people who – I know people who liked it and didn't like it and saw it twice and that stuff. But really, it's, you know, that's just the age we live in. There are so many screens and so many movies that a film can really – suck it up without being even really a phenomenon or something people are crazy about. You can just make a lot of money really quick.
A phenomenon like Avatar.
Well, no, Avatar's made three and a half times what Alice in Wonderland has made, so it's not even close to Avatar. That's it. So those are the movies at the box office. And what did you guys see? I've been traveling. I haven't seen a thing. I was at Ebert Fest, actually, so I saw all my movies there this weekend.
Well, I was traveling as well, so I didn't see much of anything. By the way, just to follow up, Kick-Ass, I was wrong, has not made more internationally. It's made $21.4 million, so it's got a cume of $56.1 million.
That's great. So it's already open. It probably hasn't opened wide or everywhere yet. It's not that kind of movie. It's already made $20 million overseas. That's great.
Yes.
I saw Date Night this weekend.
Oh, how was it?
You know, I was really disappointed. I didn't think it was very funny.
Oh. And you didn't have high expectations, I'm sure.
Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't say they were high, but I was expecting to be entertained. I probably chuckled maybe two or three times. There were some really, really funny moments, but for the most part, I thought it was really sort of dull.
Pedestrian?
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it would make a really good, I don't know, DVD rental?
Oh, yeah. No, it's gonna clean up when it comes out on DVD.
I think the same is going to be true of Kick-Ass. I think it's going to be one of those cult DVD films.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It will certainly do well on DVD. I spent the weekend seeing a lot of movies, but none of them new. I was at the Roger Ebert Film Festival in Champaign, Illinois. I go there every year. It's like my fourth year. It's a lot of fun. It's in one gorgeous old renovated movie theater. And Roger Ebert's there and his wife, Chaz. And he's a beloved local figure. He went to college there. He wrote on the college newspaper. Everybody loves him there. And it's really sweet and charming to see all the filmmakers and people who come there and have such respect for him and appreciate all the support he's shown them during the ups and downs of their careers. And this year, there weren't a lot of guests because the Icelandic volcano, which we cursed at every turn, kept a lot of the European people grounded, so they couldn't come to the festival. But it was a good week. They showed Pink Floyd The Wall. They were going to show it in 70mm, but the print was no good. But they show new movies and classic films. They always have a silent movie that they show with live orchestral accompaniment. This year, it was The Man with a Movie Camera, the Soviet film, and they had the Alloy Orchestra, who's probably the most famous silent film group around, and they compose original music and perform it around the world, and that was a lot of fun. And saw some good documentaries and some good films, new and old, and I saw a real treat on the last day. It was called Song Sung Blue. It's a documentary about this couple.
Neil Diamond!
Yeah, they go by the stage name of Lightning and Thunder, and they're Milwaukee famous couple. They, you know, they perform around there at state fairs, and they had their following, and this filmmaker followed them for about a decade, it seems like. And, you know, life intervenes, tragedy intervenes. They keep thinking they're about to get to Vegas and have, you know, themselves a hit. And they're not exactly delusional. They have their fan base and their following. They even performed on stage with Pearl Jam briefly one night. But, you know, life intrudes. Sad things happen. It's really interesting about people not pursuing their dream, but just loving what they do. And they're not deluded. They don't talk about Neil Diamond as a god or anything. They're not obsessed with him. They don't have shrines to him. They obviously love him. But it becomes this movie about just this couple and their love for each other and the ups and downs and the hard times they face and perform when there's nobody there in the audience. It's really heartbreaking. And it was really kind of moving and sweet and interesting and about celebrityness and fame and just doing what you love. And, you know, it played Slam Dance 2 years ago. It's at Ebert Fest today. And I have no idea why it hasn't been picked up. I mean, it seems a natural for a slot on public television, natural for home video. It would be a perfect double bill with Anvil, you know, a movie about the documentary about that heavy metal band. Mm-hmm. It's a real crowd. It's not going to make billions of dollars or anything like that, but it's a very crowd pleasing, but interesting, well done documentary. And I'm surprised it hasn't been picked up yet. If I was a small film company like ISC, I'd snatch it up in a heartbeat.
Well, think about all of the films that haven't been picked up. I mean, that's part of the issue these days is that independent films are very difficult. Documentaries are almost impossible.
Yeah, but what can they be asking for? I think it would get good enough reviews and has a good enough hook about Neil Diamond that it would get good reviews theatrically. And then you release it, you show it on your TV channel and put it on DVD, and you're going to make back your $200,000-$300,000. To me, I think it's a good commercial bet.
Well, you'd also have to spend, you know, another $300,000 or $400,000 just marketing it. So that's part of the issue is that, you know, there's no more Paramount Vantage, there's no more Miramax, there's no more Think Film is gone. IFC Films is still there, but there are so many of these small independent distributors that aren't around anymore. Instead,
they always come and go, don't they? I mean, the same ones. Orion is no longer here. You know, the little indie labels that were around 30 years ago. They're gone 10 years. Everybody, they go in cycles of decades. You know, they all seem gone. There's a whole crop of new small indie distributors. It's not a movie that needs or would get theatrical release, but it is commercial and audience appealing. I think it would get good reviews, and it already has a great one from Roger Ebert. And I think it's easy enough to describe and sell. It's not like it's some hard, difficult documentary film. It's a very commercial one. I think it would work. I think it's a smart bet for whatever distributors are still out there.
Well, the distributors that are still out there are mostly studios, and what they're really interested in, of course, is 3D content.
No!
And this week, two films, it was announced, would be converted from 2D to 3D. One is actually being delayed so that it can be converted properly, and that's Green Hornet. This is the Seth Rogen action film, superhero film, and he is actually all for it. He says, quote, "A lot of visually driven sequences that director Michel Gondry came up with were first conceived for a 3D movie. After watching the first third of the film and working with Sony Imageworks, the studio decided now would be a perfect time to commit to 3D. Since it was always a dream of ours, the look of the film complements it perfectly. None of the effects shots have been started, none of the blue screen shots have been composited, and this lets us do all of it in 3D. So he's really excited about it, but fans online were not very excited about yet another film that's being converted, especially after Clash of the Titans. That film is going to be delayed from December to January 14th, 2011, mainly because it would be going up against Tron for 3D screens, and presumably they need more time to do the conversion.
Perhaps it's not a very good movie.
Well, that's,
No. You can release big movie. Remember, what do we have this year in January or February that made a lot of money?
I know. I'm just saying that that's what some people are saying, that one of the reasons why they're moving it into
There are only so many 3D screens.
I know. I'm just saying. Just getting another point of view out there.
Well, and I think what you're thinking of, Michael, is Paul Blart Mall Cop, which made a mint in January of 2009.
Didn't we just have one in January or February of 2010?
Avatar was cleaning up at the box office then.
Yeah. There was another big hit. Anyway, you can release a hit film. There was something pushed back to February. What was it?
Oh, it was the Martin Scorsese DiCaprio movie.
God bless
Shutter
you.
Shutter Island.
It was Shutter Island, which made its second biggest grossing film of all time, grossed over $100 million. You know, there's just no good bad time. And especially when you're saying there's only X number of screens, you're an idiot if you try and release it, say, 2 weeks in advance of Tron, only get 2 weeks to play, and then get bigfooted. You know, they've got to space them out. So every weekend is precious. So January and February now is lovely if you're a 3D film. But Michel Gondry, not a promising director for this movie, this franchise. But, you know, it's the sort of movie that they're just going to shoot in 3D now no matter what. Whenever they do it, they're going to make it 3D, whether it's before, during, or after the filmmaking process. So they can do it well or poorly, you know, like Clash of the Titans or Up.
Just to clarify, you're not saying that Clash of the Titans and Up were on par 3D-wise. You're saying they were on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying right. You can just because it's being converted to 3D afterwards doesn't mean it's going to be good or bad. It depends on the film.
Well, another film being converted afterwards is M. Night Shyamalan's big-budget film adaptation of the Nickelodeon cartoon series Avatar, which of course had to change its name to The Last Airbender. It will still be released July 2nd, even though it's being converted, I guess, presently.
Well, did they just let us? They didn't just make the decision now, did they? I wonder, because if they're rushing it this much, it's already April, then this could be another example of shoddy 3D work.
Apparently, from what I've heard, Shyamalan actually always had 3D shots in mind, but I think that's just studio spin. I think they've decided to go for a quick conversion, and we'll find out. Certainly, the comments on many of the blogs online were negative about it, and people were complaining that if they couldn't find it in 2D, which is how they really wanted to see it, they'd be very upset.
Yeah, I'm fine with 3D. I'm just sick of paying $3 extra for the privilege.
Well, I'm sort of sick of M. Night Shyamalan films, so none of this bodes well for me.
It's not an original screenplay, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. I think this is just, I always think he's a very strong visual guy and has a really great cinematic sense. So maybe when it's not his script that's meandering all about and doesn't have a twist ending, maybe it'll actually work.
Frankly, I'm surprised he did a movie that he didn't write. I thought that was his thing. Like, I will only direct movies that are mine.
After three flops in a row, I guess you change your mind.
What do you guys think of Ridley Scott? Of course, he's got Robin Hood coming out.
That's not in 3D, is it?
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. No. And that was part of, that was what was this article was about, actually.
Right. That film is not in 3D. He decided not to go for a 3D conversion of that. And while promoting Robin Hood, he told reporters that he has no interest in converting Blade Runner to 3D or remaking Gladiator for 3D. However, he does plan on directing not one, but two prequels to Aliens, or I should say Alien, which is a film he made in the late 70s, and he will be shooting them in 3D.
This is very strange. Alien is such an interesting, it's a really high-class horror film, and it's beautifully made and eerie. The sequels are like action films, which are not in the spirit of the original. They're great. The second one is great. But is there a need for two prequels to Alien? I mean, it's a franchise name, but I'm just stunned that Ridley Scott would be involved in it. I guess he had some good idea.
Well, you might want to mention who directed one of those sequels to Alien.
James Cameron, of course. It's one of the great action films. That, you know, Aliens 2 and Terminator 2 are two, you know, signal action films. They're great, great movies. Certainly two of the best he ever made. And I don't know, two prequels to Alien. I'm not surprised they're happening. I'm surprised Ridley Scott is the guy directing them.
Well, and he thinks he can get them done relatively quickly, even though he's shooting in 3D. He kind of commented on the fact that, you know, Cameron took 4 years to make his film because they were developing cameras just to shoot Avatar, but that they've, quote, moved beyond what Cameron used on his monster hit, and that it will be a little bit easier for him.
Are they doing the same thing where they'll be able to shoot it and look on a monitor and see what it looks like in the 3D virtual world? Is that the idea?
I'm sure partly, yes. And I'm also sure that he will be using a lot more live action rather than computer-generated imagery.
Well, now, I love Blade Runner. It's one of the greatest films of all time, incredibly influential.
Oh, God.
I don't like Gladiator, especially because it beat Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. But when you say, do you mean remake or do you mean convert Gladiator to 3D? You don't mean somebody said, do you want to remake?
Convert.
Yeah, no, actually, somebody asked him according to HitFix, somebody asked him during one of the interviews for Robin Hood whether he had any intention of going back to remake Gladiator as a 3D film. And he said no.
What an asinine question.
I read it the other way. I read it that somebody asked if he would go back and make it 3D, and he said absolutely not. And then later, Russell Crowe's like, not a bad idea, or something like that. I don't think it was like remake it from scratch.
Well, of course, the reason we're talking so much about 3D films, and I shouldn't say we, really, it's Hollywood that's talking a lot about 3D films, is because of the success of Avatar this past holiday season and then into this year. And that film was released on DVD and Blu-ray over the weekend, or I guess it was released on Thursday, which was Earth Day, a day that DVDs and Blu-rays aren't normally released. And on that day alone, it sold, I think it was 4 million units, and 2.7 of those were on Blu-ray. So it set a record for single-day Blu-ray sales, and then went on over the weekend to sell 6.7 million DVDs and Blu-rays, of which, how many were Blu-ray.
The total Blu-ray was 2.7 million.
2.7 million. Okay.
Yeah.
But for the 4-day week. For the 4-day week. Okay. Well, either way, it's $130 million in the United States alone.
However, I would point out that 5, 6, 7 years ago, Triple X, the action film, grossed $100 million its opening weekend on DVD. So this isn't this may be a record, but it's not that much more than a movie you wouldn't even think would come close to it. I'm intrigued because I was wondering if people would buy this movie on DVD in 2D, in without all the extras that they're gonna release, you know, down the road, 6 months down the road when they put out a special edition. I knew it would make a lot of money. I wonder how long it'll last. It certainly may be top heavy geek buying, but I don't know.
Well, see, I think it's top heavy geek buying who will continue to buy every other iteration that comes out, and it's also people who just really thought it was a really good movie and aren't smart enough to know that there are going to be other iterations. I think that's why it was so successful. It got both camps.
Yeah, and of course the geeks who buy it over and over again know that James Cameron, you know, always puts out elaborate new editions. Terminator has always been the standard bearer for DVD and Laserdisc. Every time they get some new technology or some new thing, they put it out again. I mean, you can buy like 10 versions of the Terminator 2. I mean, it's unbelievable. So this may happen with Avatar down the road as well. But I haven't watched it yet. I haven't had a chance to hook up my TV and check it out on plasma and see what it's like in 2D on the home screen. I'm intrigued. So,
Well, I wonder if maybe that the release of Avatar on DVD and Blu-ray was the reason that year over year, the North American box office was down over the weekend. Probably not, but, you know.
That's a good point, but there was, you know, the biggest new release was the Jennifer Lopez, The Backup Plan. So it was a weak new release. It's definitely a downtime before we hit, Robert Downey Jr.'s movie. I think it's more an indication of...
But don't you mean Iron Man 2? We should say it's Iron Man 2 that you're speaking of.
Robert Downey Jr. movie, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, it's what's called a brain fart. You couldn't think of the movie.
Right.
No, I knew what it was. I just said Robert Downey Jr. movie.
Okay. Moving on.
Moving on. You know, really what we should be saying is, you know, Avatar was not released to home video in a format that can be shown in 3D or seen in 3D. But according to Steve Zaitchek of the LA Times, the popularity of 3D may be changing and affecting the way screenplays are written.
Yeah, so what this means is like, people writing screenplays now, any sort of temple or franchise movie, some point every 8 or 10 pages when they have an action scene, they also say, and the car comes flying out right at the audience. I mean, it's just
I thought that was really bizarre. Like, right? I mean, is that what they mean?
Yeah. What else could they mean? And the tentacles of the octopus reach up right into the screen. You know, it's very sad. Maybe they'll add in pictures with little imageries popping out at you to emphasize what it's going to look like.
Well, I think it's the same thing as a comedian who, and this was pointed out in Steve Zaitchek's piece, you know, a comedian will put in, you know, one or two jokes per page in a comedy. They don't sit there and say, that was a joke. You should be laughing here. But the way they write it, you kind of know it's a joke. And I think the same is true of the 3D elements going into some of these screenplays, that they're not saying this will be in 3D, but the way they write it, you kind of know this is a 3D set piece.
Yeah, but if you have a good director, any director can take anything and make it interesting in 3D.
Well, actually, director Samuel Bayer did not want to turn his remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street into 3D.
Good for him.
Yeah, New Line.
See, I loved Sam Bayer.
Well, they asked him, and he said this was shot in 2D and was meant to be shown in 2D. He added, just like I don't want to see a lot of great movies remade, alluding to the other Hollywood Vogue, I don't want to see a lot of them in 3D. The irony is that he's saying that about a film that he remade. I mean, that just is weird. He remade a film, so...
Well, no, he's saying there are movies that shouldn't be remade, like Casablanca and The Third Man, and they're movies that should be remade, like Robin Hood and Nightmare on Elm Street, which is a perfectly reasonable film to have a new edition of. You know, it's a horror film. It's a franchise. So I don't think he's being contradictory there. I do like the fact, though, that he resisted some cheap-ass 3D, you know, renovation to try and squeeze out a few bucks that would cheapen the movie, because I actually saw the trailer for the film, and I don't even like – I've never even seen a Nightmare on Elm Street film. I'm not a big horror fan. I was kind of like, wow, that was kind of creepy and looked interesting.
Well, the first one was a classic. It's very good.
Yeah, I'm just not a horror movie guy. I never saw it. I know that one, and I think Nightmare 4 is supposed to be really good, too.
Well,
that's supposed to be the other signal one in the series.
Well, and Zaitchek points out that there are a lot of filmmakers that are somewhat apprehensive to shoot everything in 3D, that not everything deserves 3D or works in 3D. And one studio, who refused to be named or declined to be named, they want to shoot a romantic comedy in 3D, which is kind of what you'd like
Why?
To see. Look, I don't know. I know, Michael, you'd like to see a film other than an animated film or an action film or a big tentpole movie be shot and released in 3D, specifically a drama. But, you know, a lot of these filmmakers are saying, you know, you have to be careful about how you use 3D. Otherwise, it's going to become like the CGI craze of the late 90s and early 2000s, where everything was computer animated.
Yeah, I'm just saying 3D won't have come of age as an all-enveloping part of movies, just like sound and color, until you see serious dramas and other films and romantic comedies being shot in 3D. If it doesn't happen, that means it is sort of a fad or it's just a gimmick for action films. But if you look at a movie like Up, there's a lot of scenes that are quiet and sad and beautiful, and the 3D very subtly works well with the scenes and makes it a better movie, or at least it's used intelligently as part of telling the story. And so when someone like Martin Scorsese makes a drama in 3D, then we can see if it's actually something that will keep a movie interesting and be used as part of the palette, or whether it's just more of a gimmick.
But with all of the money that's being spent on refurbishing movie theaters to make them 3D compatible, 3D is not going to go away.
No, yeah, it's not. Not anytime soon.
You know, it won't go away, but the theaters need to be redone anyway for digital projection and all that. And the revamping isn't just for 3D, right? Sperling, I mean, all the money they're spending doesn't mean they can only show 3D stuff, right? It just means they're compatible with the latest 3D, right?
Well, they're compatible with that 3D should they get 3D technology on top of the digital projection technology that they will need to show a 3D film.
Right, but the refurbishment means just much better picture sound and top of the line. They don't need to get a print sent to them. They can get a digital print.
Correct.
And that's just good overall, right?
Yes, that is.
Yeah.
I mean, well, effectively, it's a 2D. The digital projection is a 2D system. Now, you can add a 3D system on top of it, but you don't need to.
Hey, is this podcast in mono or stereo?
Actually, it's in mono.
So we are a 1D. Yes.
Yes, we're 1D.
Yay!
Well, you can't even see us, so technically we're 0D.
Let's move on. Enough 3D.
Well, actually, we can move on. And so did Disney. They moved on to Rich Ross, who is now the new head of the studio. And he is finally talking to the press. I guess he wanted to wait 6 months to kind of get his feet wet, fire everyone, and then hire a few people. Wait, did I say that? Did that come out of my mouth? So yeah, he's putting his own team in place there. He's been doing it for some time. Everybody knows that he, you know, Dick Cook was one of the first people to go, who was the head of the studio for 20 some odd years. And he, you know, was very upsetting to many people, including, you know, Johnny Depp and Jerry Bruckheimer and some big names in Hollywood when they let him go.
And Dick Cook.
Yeah. Well, good point. But this week they hired
Mrs. Cook.
And Mrs. Cook.
And the little cooks.
Well, on, I guess, Wednesday of last week, they hired M.T. Carney to head up the marketing division over there at the studio. She will be the president of marketing and oversee all aspects of worldwide marketing and distribution, including all creative, media, online development, publicity, and promotions for movie releases under Disney's banners. Walt Disney Pictures, Disney Animation.
She's a total badass. When you take a look at her background, take a look at the photo that was in the Hollywood Reporter story. She can't be anything older than maybe mid-40s, maybe, probably younger. She's just she's a badass.
And I might say quite the hottie. You know, I wouldn't mind if the picture
is,
were of her badass.
She's stunning.
I'm sure Disney will never talk to us again.
Another blow for feminism. Is there any work that she's done that you think is really good?
She's worked a lot of advertising agencies. She's done a lot of global marketing.
Yeah, she worked at Ogilvy & Mather, where she was responsible for American Express. And then she was the co-founder of a communications planning firm, Naked New York. And she started that in 2006. And some of their clients were Coca-Cola, Kraft, Johnson & Johnson, Google, Microsoft, and Nokia. I mean, she obviously knows what she's doing. She's very smart and... good golly, that is a good picture. That's all I can say.
Is there anything in her resume that she's creatively known for?
I don't know. We'll have to check into that. That's a good question. It is a good question.
Whatever. Who cares then that she was named head of marketing? Whatever. I don't care. If you said they did this movie, they did this campaign, they did that, it was really clever, I would say, okay, that's a smart person.
Well, the more important news coming out of that meeting with the press that president of the studio, Rich Ross, had was that they're going to be making a sequel to Monsters, Inc., and it will hit theaters in November 2012. And of course, everybody knows the original film, which was released in 2001, grossed $529 million worldwide. So that film will be coming out 11 years later, but still, it's done incredibly well on video. Another film that they're going to be making is a new movie featuring the Muppets, and it will introduce a new character named Walter. According to Richard Ross, he's in felt and fur rehab now as we build him.
Well, these are both interesting. One, Monsters, Inc. I mean, Pixar has always resisted sequels. Mainly, its first sequel was Toy Story 2, and it's finally doing Toy Story 3, and Toy Story 2 was originally direct to DVD. But they've always said, no, we don't want to churn out sequels. They resisted it mightily. I'm fascinated that they decided finally Monsters, Inc. should be made into a sequel. I guess they come up with a good enough idea, and that's why they did it. Otherwise, it sort of it makes me a little uneasy, but, you know, they waited so long, I guess. Now is the right time. And the Muppets movie, I hope this still involves Jason Segel of How I Met Your Mother.
It does.
Oh, that's great. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And, of course, a couple other projects. Tim Burton's been looking at a full-length version of his original short, Frankenweenie, which he made all those years ago as a tribute to Vincent Price. He's turning that into a feature film. They're doing Winnie the Pooh in hand-drawn animation, which I'm very glad to hear. I don't think any of the Winnie the Pooh movies have been great. You know, their shorts, they're sort of nice, and they have good narration, but it's a very good movie that could get a feature film version, and it absolutely should be done in hand-drawn. It should not be computer animated. So that's thank God they realized the obvious as far as that is concerned. And, of course, Disney already has the live-action John Carter of Mars franchise, which is going to be a big one. This one stars the guy from Friday Night Lights, so I'm very excited for him.
I like what Ann Thompson had to say about this meeting. She was there with Rich Ross when he met the press, and of course Ann Thompson, Thompson on Hollywood, which is on the IndieWire site. She says, the bad news. Ross let loose a lot of corporate speak about brands and market quadrants and giving consumers what they want, which clearly is the new company mantra as the studio seeks to narrow ancillary windows and cross-pollinate a consistent marketing message across multiple platforms. Now, let me interpret that for you. The movie's going to be coming out on Friday and on DVD this Tuesday.
Yeah, so let me interpret that for you. He was totally boring.
Yeah, he was boring, exactly.
Well, then maybe some of the television news will be a little bit more exciting. I know, Karen, you love television. Why don't you fill us in on some of the pilots that are being created for next fall?
Well, I'm not going to go through these one by one because that would take forever. But I was reading an article about the various pilots that – and pilots are also not necessarily what's definitely going to come out in the fall. They are shows that are being made as like auditions to see if networks want to put them on the air. And, I was looking at this list and I thought of how derivative this looks. I'm not excited about anything that looks like it's probably going to make it onto the schedules. Like a remake of Rockford Files and a remake of Hawaii Five-O and, a David E. Kelly legal drama and, more Jerry Bruckheimer-ness. There's nothing on this list that gets me really excited.
Well, if you look at ABC, they've got the remake of The Rockford Files with showrunner David Shore, who's, I guess, also responsible for House. J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams is doing the spy drama Undercovers. David Kelly is doing another legal drama, there is a shock, called Kindreds. And Jerry Bruckheimer is doing a show there called Chase. So that is a kind of an A-list packed lineup.
I'm just saying that they all seem really derivative.
Yeah, I think you're right. A remake of Rockford Files, a remake of Hawaii Five-O, the St. David E. Kelly again, Jerry Bruckheimer again, Friends with Benefits, which is Friends with Sex, I guess. The TV show Friends with Sex. It does feel very sort of familiar. You got to go to cable and pay cable and basic cable for interesting shows.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we're seeing the same actors, too. I mean, we're seeing Dana Delaney and Deborah Messing and Jerry O'Connell. I mean, it's just disappointing.
Well, now, speaking of cable, Michael, I know you like that show Southland, and TNT announced today that they picked that up.
I put it in Big Deal, Big Whoop. Yes, they did. They aired the 13 episodes that NBC shot. And now they've picked it up for an additional 10 episodes. They're calling it the third season, but that's great news. It drew a couple million people, didn't do great, but had really good demos, and they're happy with it. So they'll shrink the cast, but there you go. It's promising good news.
Well, we'll place a link in the show notes to the story about all of the television pilots. But in the meantime, let's move on to music. Last week, we talked about the Coachella Music Festival, which takes place in Indio, California at the Empire Polo Field. Well, this week, that same field was used in Indio for Stagecoach, which is the, I suppose, country music equivalent of Coachella, although it's much, much smaller. I believe it only has one or two stages. And
there must be no grass left on those fields whatsoever.
Well, actually, they do quite a good job of maintaining it. Over Saturday and Sunday, over 100,000 people, with a daily average attendance of more than 50,000 people, turned out for this year's event. And that's last year's was 40,000 per day, so that's kind of good. And
that sounds a lot. That sounds a lot more fun than the number of people that were there at Coachella.
Well, it's certainly
a lot less crowded.
Yes. I mean, when you're letting it, think about it, 25,000 more people per day showed up for Coachella.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically, it's like a Madison Square Garden and a half each day.
And to describe what festivals are, as one reader contacted me, they've been popular in Europe for decades. It's the way a lot of people see a lot of concerts instead of, and Lollapalooza sort of pioneered it in the U.S., and of course, in the early days of rock and roll, that's what they did. You'd go to a theater and you would see like 20, 30, 40 minute sets by Chuck Berry, followed by the Everly Brothers, followed by Muddy Waters, followed by the Stones. You know, everybody traveled in groups. And what a festival is, it's usually 2, 3, or 4 day weekend in some big area. You buy a pass through the entire festival or maybe just one day, and you'll have the main act on the main stage and cool other acts and smaller stages on the side, and you decide where you want to go. Some people camp out right in front on a smaller stage and stay there all day. Others run around back and forth to see different shows. Depending on the type of festival, there might be booths of crafts and other cool stuff. It's just sort of a big happening and a way to see a lot of great music in one week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's basically like a Woodstock.
And Stagecoach, of course, is Gators Country Music. It's a really good event with a lot of really good acts year by year.
Yeah, and on the main stage this year was Toby Keith and Brooks and Dunn, and that was Saturday night. And then Keith Urban and Sugarland. That was Sunday night, Toby Keith and Brooks and Dunn. And then on Saturday, it was Keith Urban and Sugarland. Now, what's interesting is that, or not interesting, but our next story is about Taylor Swift, Lady Antebellum, Carrie Underwood, and a number of country music stars turning out for the Academy of Country Music salute to Brooks and Dunn in Las Vegas last Monday. It took place at the MGM Garden Arena, and it was taped for a May 23rd CBS special. Apparently, Brooks and Dunn, and they are a huge country music act, they are going on tour for the last time ever. This tour is called The Last Rodeo, and they're going to hang up their quote-unquote collective spurs in August.
Well, they're going to keep performing individually, but just as a duo, they're calling it a day. They feel like they've done everything they can. They've been a huge, huge country act. They're the biggest country duo of all time, bigger than the Everly Brothers, bigger than anyone else.
What about the Judds?
The Judds is a big duo. Brooks and Dunn is bigger. The Judds didn't run as many years, but they've gotten back together for some shows. I'm not sure if they're touring or recording new music, but they're having some sort of anniversary show. So I'm very excited about that. I'd love to see them in concert. I never have. But Brooks and Dunn is the biggest, one biggest country acts, period. But certainly as a duo, they've just been legendary for a good decade or more. And they've done everything they can. And they're finally just saying, you know what, let's call it a day. The end of an era.
You know what's funny is we now know how to make Karen be quiet. Let's talk about,
country music. even less interesting than the music itself. They started in the late 80s. They've sold more albums than anybody else in country music history as far as duos. They're just massively big. Their last concert is August 10th in Nashville.
Well, another big musical act these days, at least in the Poptronica genre, is MIA.
That's like your new thing, new phrase you coined.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to use that until everybody starts using it, and then I'm going to like take credit for it. But I'm sure somebody else said it or created or crafted it before I did.
That's okay.
I fear I've heard it before, but what the heck? Go crazy.
Well, MIA, who has two albums out, is evidently going to release a third album, and everybody knows this because, well, I'm sure people knew before this incident happened, but she's releasing her third album June 29th, and the first song can be heard now all over the internet. It's called Born Free, and people are downloading it for free. However, Interscope Records is chasing after all of these people and trying to pull it down off of YouTube as fast as they go up, which...
I can't find it.
I can't find it either, and frankly, I think it's a bit of a mistake. This is the best publicity and press you can get for a new album, and everybody...
Yeah, Interscope's really stupid.
Well, no, I disagree, but it may not be the official mix of the song. It could be an early bootleg, so it may not have the sound that she wants. And I'm sure they'll make it available online on YouTube, but they want to do it officially so that the people are hearing the right version with the video, et cetera. There's nothing wrong with wanting, you know, you don't necessarily want it to leak out to every site in the world,
but
it may not be the final version, you know.
But it's a losing proposition. I mean, once it's gotten out on the internet, you're going to have to embrace it.
Well, they've done a good job. You couldn't find it, right?
Well,
yeah, but I didn't dig all that hard.
Yeah, that's true. And if you went onto any BitTorrent site, I'm sure you could find it. Not that I would ever do that or am recommending that you do, but if you did, I'm sure you'd find it.
Yeah, well, M.I.A. is a hugely critically acclaimed act. She merges like 18 different genres in every song. I've never really gotten into her, but she's very critically respected and is a significant artist according to a lot of people. So
people probably know her from the Slumdog Millionaire soundtrack.
Yes, that's right.
Absolutely. So I'm definitely ready to listen to her new album, and hopefully I'll be on board this time like I haven't been before.
Well, you're saying that a lot of people think M.I.A. is a big deal rather than a big whoop. Which is another way.
I think we got to have some music or applause or something for Big Deal, Big Whoop, a signature theme.
I'm going to start working on that.
You know, maybe applause followed by boo. Yeah, you know, Big Deal or a Big Whoop.
Well, of course, this is our popular weekly segment in which we discuss all of the top entertainment news stories of the week and whether they are a big deal or whether anyone cares about them. Our first story this week is about Shrek, the fourth movie. The official title is Shrek Forever After, but the ads and posters call it Shrek the Final Chapter, and the studio is saying they're doing this for marketing purposes. Karen, is this schizophrenic title a big deal or a big whoop?
You know, it's really neither, but it seems really pretty stupid.
Michael?
I mean, you know, decide.
Karen's right. It's a big whoop. As long as the word Shrek is in there somewhere, people know what it is.
I think I wrote on somebody's site, look, everybody knows the Shrek brand, so at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you call it. In fact, what was the third Shrek called?
Shrek the Third.
That's right, but very few people remember that.
Well, I actually do think I do think it matters what you call it. I think they need to decide.
Yeah,
I think it's really
consistent.
Stupid of them to be having two. Yeah, you need to be consistent.
You're right. It's a big deal.
Because my mother would be very confused.
It's a big deal of stupidity for the marketing people.
Our next story is about Robert Downey Jr., who is eyeing a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. The suddenly franchise-friendly actor is in talks with Disney about a darker take on The Wizard of Oz, in which we see a charlatan from Kansas become the great and all-powerful man behind the curtain, pretending to be The Wizard of Oz. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is going from virtually uncastable to having Iron Man, Sherlock Holmes, and now, you know, another massive, huge, big movie that he's going to be the star of. It's amazing turnaround.
I would tend to agree with that. Karen, what do you think?
I agree. I think it's a big deal. I think it's really curious that he seems to want Johnny Depp's career. I also think it's a big deal, too, that they're doing a prequel of The Wizard of Oz. It just seems so strange.
Bad idea. And let's remember Return to Oz, the darker take on Oz that was a sequel that didn't do so well.
Our next story is about South Park, which has been effing censored after the show and its creators received death threats from a radical Islamic website over depictions of Muhammad. Comedy Central censored a new episode of the show and even censored the word censored. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
This is a huge deal. I mean, this is censorship as, you know, it's a case study.
Michael?
I think it's a big whoop. The guys took it in stride. They said we presented the show we wanted, and the studio changed it even more because, you know, they'd always sort of played around and knew that certain factions of Islam consider depictions of Muhammad offensive. In fact, in Iran, you can find depictions of Muhammad all over the place because certain sects don't think that's a big deal. So it's not everybody in Islam who's offended by depictions of Muhammad, but they took it in stride. It's a show that always pushes the envelope and always gets bleeped in some way. But boy, you know, getting death threats and that stuff, it's a big deal for them. I mean, they've got the cops in, and it's a pretty serious thing.
I loved what The Simpsons did, and they were very quick on this. On this Sunday's episode, they had Bart Simpson, who's always writing on a blackboard during the opening credits. He was writing, "South Park, we'd stand behind you if we weren't so scared."
Yeah, that was funny.
That's awesome.
Our next story is about Heather Locklear, who was charged in a hit-and-run crash. The lovely and talented actress hit a street sign near her home in Thousand Oaks and allegedly failed to report the wreck. Tiger Woods was not in the vicinity. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal because when I reported my car accident, which I had all alone on a highway by hitting a stretch of ice, everybody treated me like an idiot for calling the cops. The insurance people were like, "You're calling the police?" I'm like, "Yeah, don't you have to?" And the cop came up. He's like, "Why'd you call me? Here's a $150 ticket." And you're like, "I'm not taking your license away." So I'm not surprised you didn't call anyone. So good for you, Heather. Apparently I'm the idiot. I don't know why you're in trouble.
Well, Karen, what do you think?
Okay, I was going to say that it's a big whoop until I heard that story. Now I guess I'll say it's a big deal. But why, if we're going to talk about celebrity, you know, bad things happening to celebrities, where's Bret Michael? Bret Michael's on this list.
He's coming. He's coming.
Yes.
Oh, he is? Okay, good.
Yes, we should have prefaced that. moving on. Will you pay $10 a month for Hulu? Hulu is starting to ramp up plans to charge for access to an entire season of a TV show. The plan is apparently to keep the 5 most recent episodes available for each show free of charge, but to charge $10 to access the entire catalog of shows, however old. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
You know, I'm going to say that this is a big whoop because I think that it's a good thing for them to do. So I think that people will be up in arms about it. I'm not going to pay $10, but I think it's a good idea for Hulu to do it. I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Michael?
It's a big deal. It's definitely the wave of the future, but it's too much money. $120 a year to have access to Hulu, plus Netflix streaming, plus your cable bill, plus it's just like $20 a year. And I would be talking about, you know, the newspapers and magazines are making the same mistake. You know, the Times is probably going to charge $20 a month to have access to the New York Times. It's just too much money. And, you know, once you add up the thousands of websites and streaming videos and all that, you're going to be paying, like, what, $800 a month to access entertainment?
No, but,
it should be,
but
it,
what if
it
you
should
don't
be 20
have
bucks
cable?
A year.
It sh- but what it, if you it, don't have cable? This is for people who don't have TV.
It's not. We have cable and the kids go on Hulu all the time. They watched Archer that way. They watch other stuff. It's to catch up on things you didn't know about and didn't DVR.
No, but the most recent 5 episodes will still be available for free. So for people who missed, you know, last week's episode, that's still available for free. This is for people who, you know, watch certain TV shows and just want to watch those certain TV shows.
Yeah,
they
have
don't
cable.
Need to. It's
we
an alternative.
But they go back and they say, "Oh, I want to watch Barney Miller," or whatever it might be, and they watch an old show that's not on right now, and that's what the $10 a month is going to have to pay for. I just think it's way too much money. I think it's an adjunct. I don't think it can replace cable. Not everything is on Hulu, but it's not a substitute for cable. It's a different thing, and the Times doesn't substitute for everything. You know, you got to pay for all of them. It adds up. It's too much money.
Well, Michael, I think a lot of people are agreeing with you, and they're paying $9.95 for Netflix per month. They're paying their $9.95 for Hulu, and then they're going to start paying for the New York Times. And to get all of it, they have to pay for a broadband internet connection.
Yeah. There's no wrong with charging. It's too much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think they're going to have to start bundling some of these subscription services. This particular subscription service for Hulu begins May 24th.
That's the rumor.
The rumor, yes. Although they pretty much, they didn't confirm it, actually. Our next story is about Conan O'Brien, who is now on tour. Turns out Hollywood is showing up for his tour. Jim Carrey, Jon Hamm, Jonah Hill, and many others have appeared. Pearl Jam even jammed with Conan on Radiohead's Creep. That is not true, actually, Michael. Pearl Jam just jammed, and Conan O'Brien sang Creep. On his own.
But not with them.
Not with Pearl Jam. No, and what's amazing to me, well, first, Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop. You know, he's a famous, popular guy. He's got a talk show that's coming out in the fall on TBS, and, you know, celebrities show up for a show. Big whoop.
Karen?
I think it's a big deal when you think of it as part of the Conan machine, which he has handled this brilliantly. I mean, this is exactly how you do it, kids.
I do love the ad campaign that TBS has for him. They say something like, "Conan, welcome to the medium-budget, low-powered world of basic cable." You know, it's very funny.
Well, you know, what's funny, too, about the idea that he jammed on Creep is that, you know, it can't be a coincidence that there was a promo for the Jay Leno show that had, you know, Jay driving in his one of his fancy cars along like PCH or something, and it had the Boys Are Back in Town or something that would be fitting for Jay.
Right.
But somebody on Hulu, yeah, somebody on YouTube like put Creep on over it, and so it's like Jay, you know, jamming in his car, and it's like, I'm a creep. It was hysterical.
That's hilarious.
Well, we'll place links to the Pearl Jam bits on the show notes. What I found really interesting about this was that each of these shows that Conan O'Brien does in each of the cities, this happened to be Seattle, where Pearl Jam is from, you know, there are hundreds of videos on YouTube from all angles. So the ability to lift your cell phone or your flip camera up into the air and tape 5-10 minutes of, you know, a live event from 20 different angles. It's remarkable how you just, everybody's a content creator now. There's no way to keep anything off of, you know, not filmed or off of YouTube.
Welcome to the future of entertainment.
They didn't create content. They stole content.
Oh, we're not going to get into that. Well, our next story is about Bret Michaels, which apparently Karen wanted to talk about earlier. He is the lead singer of Poison, which is, are they even still a group? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. Not officially, anyway. And you spelled his name wrong. It's only one T.
Well, the singer, who has only one T in his first name, remains in critical condition right now while doctors try and determine the source of his brain hemorrhage. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal for the obvious reason. I mean, the guy's in serious condition. But, you know, it's funny because all of my friends are about my age and we all grew up, you know, watching all these, you know, hair metal bands. I mean, this is like devastating. Bret Michaels, really?
Well, he's also on Celebrity Apprentice right now.
Well, and he's, of course, he's, you know, Rock of Love, too. I mean, he's reinvented himself as a reality star, which is, you know, an interesting choice. It worked for him. But it's just, it's a very sad story. Poor guy. Michael? Big deal, big whoop.
I think it's a big deal for his fans, obviously, and him. Poison is still recording and touring together. They're still together after all these years, off and on, obviously. What I found fascinating was that TMZ quoted the winner of season 2 of Rock of Love to get her information about Bret Michaels. But it's a crazy world we live in. But,
well, she apparently had seen him or talked to somebody. And another thing that's weird, too, is that, like, you know, his dad said, I talked to him on the phone. You talked to him on the phone? What, you can't go to your son's bedside?
Yeah, I saw that too. Oh, well. God bless him. I'm not a fan of this band. I've never really paid attention to him, but certainly don't wish him ill. So I hope you get better.
Well, that's it for Big Deal or Big Whoop this week. We should probably move right into Inside Baseball, our segment where we talk about the entertainment news stories of the week that only Hollywood might care about. This week, we have a very quick news story about The Wrap, which is a new online trade, if you will, Sharon Waxman's brainchild. It's of course, she used to work for the New York Times and the trades themselves, the Hollywood Reporter and Variety. She launched The Wrap in January of 2009 with some small angel round of investment, and she just got a second round of $2 million. And a lot of people, including Nikki Fink, were writing her obituary already and saying that, you know, The Wrap was dead. And it's actually caused quite a stir and is giving the trades a run for its money. Karen, Michael, do you read The Wrap?
I read Deadline, Hollywood Daily, which is Nikki Fink's, much more often. I followed this. She was talking about the demise of The Crap, as she calls it. And, you know, it's in classic Nikki Fink style. You know, there was a really interesting piece on Hollywood News, I think it was, about all of the entertainment bloggers.
Yes.
Talking about, yeah, it was fascinating.
It was fascinating, and I was going to actually make that the Inside Baseball story of the week, and I thought, there's no way we can do that while I'm traveling, so hopefully next week we'll have some of those bloggers on to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the most interesting part of this story is just how important online entertainment bloggers have become. I mean, it's really cutthroat. I mean, we're talking like, you know, Hedda Hopper, Michael, who's the other one? We're talking,
Luella Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's just real old-fashioned, interesting stuff.
Well, think
almost
about it.
Better story than the one they write about.
Well, think about it. The same thing happened in the tech world. There was one tech blogger, Michael Arrington, and others, and, you know, some others. But now, like, there's dozens of these tech bloggers, and they're all beating each other up to get the exclusive on the next iPhone to the point where Gizmodo
paid.
Yeah,
poor Gray Powell.
The funny thing is, everybody knows Gray Powell's name. And for those of you who don't know his name, he is the engineer who works for Apple on the iPhone who accidentally left.
Oh, this is the guy who lost the iPhone?
Yes.
Oh.
He lost it in
guy
a bar.
Guy walks into a bar. Guy gets drunk. Guy loses iPhone prototype.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all I want to know is it's interesting that they're becoming a business. And like you say, they're becoming serious journalists. It's the maturation of the web, as we all expected. When are we going to approach venture capitalists about Showbiz Sandbox? That's what I want to know.
You know what?
Tomorrow.
I've got to go. I've got I couldn't remember the name of a good VC firm. Flatiron Partners.
Let's take money from Goldman Sachs. They seem to have a lot of it.
Well, oh. Yeah, but they may be paying a lot of that
they
in fines. Well, so does Cantor Fitzgerald, and that is really our next story. It's about – we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Cantor Fitzgerald's futures market for box office. And we talked about how the studios aren't really big fans of this type of what they call legalized gambling.
To describe what it is, it's basically a website where you can bet money on how you think a movie will do at the box office.
Right, and you can short a movie, you can long a movie, you can go long on a movie, and if you are one of the studios or one of the producers, you can even hedge your bet on your investment inside the film, so you could bet, you know, up to 50% of your investment in the actual movie. You could then buy shares, I guess, or futures that are short the film.
What does explain what that means?
Shorting the film means if a future is this is going to be really complicated to explain. But effectively, if one person believes that, pick a movie, Transformers 3 is going to make $63 million in its first 4 weeks, they will put out an offer to buy those futures at $63. The hope is, and they will say, I want 10 shares at $63, so I have to put up $630. The hope that they have is that the film will make $100 million, and they will actually profit the difference. They then have to have somebody else on the other end of this say, you know what? I think the film's going to make $30 million. So I'm going to buy those 10 shares at $63 because that guy's going to owe me $30 or $33 for every share. I've lost everyone, haven't I?
Yeah, it's
not that complicated. It's
very complicated.
You decide in the future what something will be worth, what a bushel of wheat, what a barrel of oil. You're betting in the future what it'll be worth. You're saying, I'm willing to pay $10 for a barrel of oil, and maybe in 6 months' time when that is due, the barrel of oil will be worth $20, and you'll be glad to cash it in and make the money. Or it'll only be worth $5, and you'll lose the money, and you won't be able – you know, you won't buy it because you'll be wasting your money. You'll be losing money, but you lose the money that you invest or gamble on it. So it's just a way of placing a bet on what something will be worth in the future. In this case, they're bringing it to movies where you can bet on opening weekend or the total box office gross. And so there's going to be all sorts of crazy implications of, you know, fans not only saying they think this Tron is going to suck, but betting money on it. And so it's going to be a real crazy indicator, perhaps, of what movies buzz is like and people who are trying to manipulate the markets. It's going to open up a whole interesting, fun can of worms.
Well, the studios hate this idea, and they have sicked the MPAA on Congress to go and try and make this illegal. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission actually voted 5-0 in favor of Cantor Fitzgerald's market, as well as another market that's completely unaffiliated with Cantor, Verianna Networks.
What were you saying, Karen?
Oh, the idea of manipulation, I think, is interesting because at first I looked at this, I'm like, well, it's going to be so easy. I mean, it's so easy to get kind of insider knowledge about movies and how you think that they're going to do. It seemed to me like it was something that could easily be manipulated. But then I guess if you really think about it, if you're going to compare it to oil or corn or what have you, you always have insiders who have the insider trading. So in a way, I guess
Absolutely.
It's not really so different.
Right. And
Absolutely.
Exactly. And you should know that in futures, insider trading is allowed.
The studio spoke out strongly against it, but it's moving forward. But there is another bill with a rider attached to it about outlawing this sort of futures trading in movie box office, which I don't know how it would pass a legal test. It would probably go to the courts if it passed. But it's been attached to a bill which is being attached to the financial regulation bill that's moving through Congress, you know, to regulate the financial markets more firmly. So this could sort of get buried in among all that and get passed shortly. And then there'll probably be a court date when these companies challenge the legality of that, that bill. So it's a long – it probably won't be online for a long, long time.
Well, what's interesting is that the Senate Agriculture Committee is the group that put this bill together.
And, yeah, what is that?
Yeah,
well, that's because one of the loopholes that they've added to the financial regulation market says that you can have all derivatives now. They're proposing would have to go through this board and be checked, and you'd have to have fast all these rules, except if you're doing a derivative through the agricultural world, because that's where derivatives were born, to help farmers take out insurance, so to speak, on what their crops might be worth. They'd say, well, I'm taking my crop to market, but if there's a locust or a frost, I'm going to buy some insurance by buying a derivative and therefore hedge my bets a little bit and buy some insurance. So if I get wiped out, I won't lose all my money. So they sort of short themselves just in case disaster strikes. So that's where derivatives first began. And so they've been always fighting to maintain their own freedom and flexibility, which means that might become a big loophole for the financial firms, which means that's why agriculture is so involved in all of the derivatives re-regulation. And that's why that's the board that the studio somehow maneuvered to get their rider placed on.
So why would the studios be against this?
They're petrified. They're worried about the movies get bad buzz and they see the Tron is being shorted. Oh my God, I'm not going to go. There's just one more bit of bad news they can't control. They don't want people making money off betting against their movies. They don't want people in the studio placing bets. What if you've got a movie you're releasing and it comes out in the news a week before that the producer has, you know, spent half the budget shorting his own movie? It's just a headache that they don't want, but they should just relax and get over it.
Well, I mean, futures are usually reserved for commodities, but if they allow future markets in gold and silver and in the dollar and in the pound and in corn, then they're going to have to probably allow a futures market here.
Well, I don't think so, because this isn't anything but gambling. You know, on a futures market, there's actual stuff involved at times. This is just going to Vegas and placing a bet on who you think will win March Madness. This is nothing but gambling.
Yeah, you're not taking delivery of the movie is what you're saying.
We're not going to send Avatar to Karen's house. I see you.
I kind of like...
No, but you can send Sam Worthington. Ooh. And yet Cantor says that this is going to help the movie industry to create liquidity and hedge their daily business activities.
Well, I don't know about Cantor. I mean, certainly Cantor has been saying that, but Skylar Moore, a lawyer who teaches film financing at the University of California in Los Angeles, said at a hearing in front of Congress recently that, quote, every investment in film is gambling, whether it's in the Cantor Exchange or whether you're producing a film, it's all gambling. And that
if it's a Tyler Perry movie, then they're guaranteed to make money.
Well, the real reason behind the opposition, he said, is the fear that the exchanges may create bad buzz about a film. But he said there's already a roar of pre-release buzz. And he went on to say that if these exchanges were to actually, you know, get approval, that there would be an enormous flood of money into the industry if there's an exchange that is based on box office results. End quote.
I have no idea what he's talking about. Do you?
Well, that's what I'm
People
saying.
People make like, money, well, but where... well, flood into the industry. What's that got to do with
yeah,
them?
Yeah, how are they getting the money? I don't get it.
I don't know. I've barely been able to grasp this as it is.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something here, because no. I'm like, well, I'm not sure where the pipeline goes from... Okay.
No, you're not missing anything, and you didn't miss this podcast either. So thank you very much.
In 1D.
In 1D. 0D, really. Yeah, I mean, you can't even see us. But thank you for listening. And if you want links to any of the stories that we discussed on this podcast, you can visit our website, showbizsandbox.com, and look them up in the show notes for episode 51. Our website is also where you will find links to all of our social networking accounts, including LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Also on our website is where you can find ways to contact us. Our email address is dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. Again, that's 888-567-7263. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group who you heard at the end of last week's show, MGMT. You can find them on their website, whoismgmt.com, or on MySpace, myspace.com/MGMT. You can find Michael Giltz in your local Apple store. Or... had to throw in a little zinger there at the end.
I'm trying to back up my computer, and it's completely frozen right now after 3 hours of uploading, so I think I'm going to have to go back to the store again.
Like I said, you can find him at your local Apple store, where he will not be able to update his website, michaelgiltz.com, or Well, I guess you have an iPhone, so you could tweet to at Michael Giltz, just like Karen, you could send out a post on at Karen underscore Woodward, or update your website at KarenWoodwardOnline.com. I will be updating my own Twitter account, at Sperling is the username to look up. You can also find some of my writing on CelluloidJunkie.com. If you want to look up the Twitter account for Showbiz Sandbox, it's at Showbiz Sandbox. Until next week, play nice.